Q.
I got something here. I want to see if you know what this is.
A cube.
A cube. That's right.
Yeah, I like that.
Hello and welcome from deep inside the magical kingdom that is Jolly Rogers Studio. This is the Q Filmcast. And whether you're with us online worldwide or perhaps nationwide on one of our affiliate stations, thanks as always for tuning in. If you don't yet know, we're the show which brings to you every week a review of a particular film currently streaming on Netflix Instant. We gather here each week, Jolly Rogers Studio, where we go around the table to tell you what we thought. That and our top three list. Mm-hmm. Always inspired by the movie in question.
Always.
Always. This is no different. You know what the movie in question is?
I do.
Yeah, let's talk about that. This week, we are talking about the 2013 Gonzo filmmaking assault on Disneyland. Or was it Disney World?
Disneyland.
Both.
Escape from Tomorrow.
Right.
Odd little film. I think we can talk about that.
Sure.
So if you've seen it, keep listening. See if you disagree or agree. Or if not, you know, even better. Why not? Keep listening to see if it's something you may want to queue up yourself. One more thing as well. We recently had the opportunity and the privilege to catch up with Roy Abramson, star of the film that we're talking about tonight. Yeah. So looking forward to that. We'll get into that too here in a little while as well. I'm Michael, by the way, along with, as always, to my left, James Hardsub Savage.
What's up, Maestro?
Oh, I'm doing okay, Savage. How are you doing?
I'm doing well.
You have a good week?
I did.
I had a pretty good week.
Did you?
Yeah. You want to know why?
Why?
Because I didn't get locked out on the balcony in my underwear. I didn't drink too much beer and have to blow Yeah, but I didn't have to blow my groceries over the side of a boat.
That's good.
And I didn't get felt up by a Japanese businessman.
Is that a good thing?
That all sound so terrible.
Well, he was from Hong Kong.
So he's a Chinese businessman.
Yeah, he was from Hong Kong, but it was not a Japanese businessman. So right. I had a pretty good week. Not bad.
Your cat flew free.
In my house? Get back with me tomorrow. I married the beautiful but yet crazy cat lady. To your left, we heard him. Always a pleasure, and that is Matthew St. Hoodie, the patron saint of quality outerwear.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing all right. Hey. I already went through that. To your left, that is Max Gumbo Johnson.
Hey, what's happening?
I'm doing all right. You ready to talk about this film?
Yeah.
Escape from Tomorrow, yes, 2013.
Yes, it's what...
Yes. The Gonzo filmmaking assault on Disney World.
Disney, this is crazy. Yeah. I thought they were, like, crazy.
It would be crazy of me not to include the producer. He's in back of you and over in his little producing cube. And that is Adam, the Bomb Rogers, greatest producer in the history of the Q Filmcast.
Hey, what's up?
The greatest one?
That's us, the Q Filmcast, 2013, Escape from Tomorrow. And let's get into it. This also inspired a top three. You know what that is? That we'll get into at the end of the show.
What's that?
Talk about Gonzo filmmaking on a budget, shoestring budget. We're also going to talk about our top three films made for under $1 million after the new millennium. You see the big tie-in there?
Yeah.
New millennium. $1 million.
Yeah, I saw what you're doing there.
Oh, it's like the French thing.
Ooh, there's some French things to talk about in this film.
This milieu is what you're saying. Mm-hmm.
So let's get into it, guys. That's it. Escape from Tomorrow. That's this week's episode, along with our top three movies budgeted under $1 million after the new millennium.
Yeah.
So let's get into that.
That's since the year 2000 for those of you not in the know.
Yeah, right.
Right.
Let's get into that, guys. And before we do that, keeping up with us, Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, Google, YouTube channel.
Yeah.
You can go there too. Q Filmcast. You just search it. But I always recommend you go to theqfilmcast.net. That's it. You go there. That's our site. Find out more about the show, more about us. So let's get into it, guys. This week, Escape from Tomorrow 2013, written and directed by first-timer Randy Moore, selected by the producer. And let's talk about that real quick, Adam. Why did you pick this film for review?
I like the idea of the making of this.
Yeah?
That's the only reason. I was curious. I wanted to watch it, and that's why I picked it.
The guerrilla style?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, sneaking around with a camera?
I get that. I was intrigued by that as well.
Yeah. It was very, very intriguing. Actually, I think Max had seen this before we watched it. Is that right?
Did. I cut out of here early last year one day to go watch this over at the Belcourt.
Oh, so you saw it in the theater?
I saw it at the theater. I was a pay. At the, those $53,000 this movie made at the theater, yeah. Six of those were mine.
Six of them were his.
Because you're a member of the Bell Corps.
Wow. Okay.
Darn tootin', buddy. Yeah, I saw it at the theater. We'll get to that later.
Yeah, yeah. So anxious to talk about this one. Before we do it, let's talk a little bit about what other people liked in reference to this film. People who liked this also liked Eva. Is that right? Eva? What is Eva?
Is that the same as Deliver Us from Eva?
It might be. They also liked Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas.
Of course.
Huh? Mirror, Mirror? Is that Julia Roberts?
That old 80s movie?
Nah, it's
no,
the,
that's a Disney movie.
Oh, the Disney,
Disney
movie.
Julia Roberts playing the witch.
They're just associating. This is like a computer program associating things.
Okay. Well, it also says they like to interview with a vampire.
No,
what's
that's it's all wrong. That
totally
information you
audience.
Have is wrong.
Okay. So
I'm
that's
rethink
the film.
That algorithm, I
Yeah.
Right.
All right, guys. Let's get into what other people thought before we tell you what we thought. Which is actually more important. It's yeah. It's much more important what we thought than IMDb and Rotten Tomatoes, but we're going to tell you anyway.
Right.
Hard Sub Savage.
Yes.
IMDb, and we're talking about the 2013 film Escape from Tomorrow.
Right.
What do you think they gave it?
6.7.
Ooh, you went a little high. We're talking 5.3.
Ooh. Wow.
But it's more than half, Hoodie. Come on. In school, if you got over 50%, you passed.
No, you didn't. You didn't.
No.
What school did you go to?
50% is a fail.
Where did you go to school?
You got grounded by your father, but you still passed. I don't know. 50% is 50%. Majority rules.
Everything's falling into place for Michael now.
I'm trying to respect the film. I'm respecting all over this film. Rotten Tomatoes. I'm going to Hoodie. Matthew St. Hoodie, the patron saint of quality outerwear. How much percentage-wise did the critics give to this film?
I was going to say 60-something, but at 5.3,
58. 56%.
Oh,
yowza.
That's the closest you've ever been.
It was deduction.
You're getting good at this. You're getting good at this.
I feel good about this.
Yeah, feel good.
Right.
I like Javin James lead it off. It gives me kind of
a barometer.
There it is. Right.
Max Gumbo Johnson, you tell me, users on Rotten Tomatoes, what did they give this film percentage-wise?
47.
They hated it, 28%.
Wow.
Wow. That's the furthest you've ever been.
That is, yeah, you're way off.
I was way off on that one.
That's
I don't
big,
think he's ever been 20 points off.
That's a big step down from the critics.
Yeah, I'm thinking, man. That's a big
that's
step.
That's the biggest step down from the critics we've had on anything.
That's 30 points from the critics and the users. Usually they're within 10. Let's talk about the film. Let's talk about what it is. Here's what you have. 2013, Escape from Tomorrow. Here's the premise. Content husband and father Jim, played by Roy Abrams' son, learns that he has lost his job during a family vacation to a popular theme park. And then he grows instantly and increasingly obsessed with two vivacious teenage girls. Did you see those girls, Max?
They were vivacious.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Clandestinely following them around the park while experiencing an acute break from reality and keeping his newly unemployed status a carefully guarded secret from his unsuspecting family. Stereotypically shot at both Walt Disney World and Disneyland, this surreal, monochromatic, psychological drama made its official world premiere at the 2013 Sundance Film Festival before receiving an official stateside release where Max spent $6 at the Belcourt Theater.
$6.25 to be exact.
$6.25 at the Belcourt Theater. Okay, there you go.
Plus bucks.
No, beer and wasabi peas.
Have you ever been to a movie with him? He always gets a beer and wasabi peas.
Yes.
It's the best.
And the peas are the wrong color.
But they're delicious.
That's a horrible combination.
Right.
You're so wrong.
Okay, so let's take a break and listen to a piece of this film, a trailer, 2013, Escape from Tomorrow. We're going to come back and tell you what we thought, and we'll do that in just a minute. Here you are.
People come here because they want to feel safe. Bad things happen everywhere. Especially here. You can't be happy all the time.
Something's wrong with Elliot.
There's something going on here. It's this place!
You're inside my head!
You've got quite an imagination! Just like old W himself.
Let's go home.
Okay, so there you go. There's a piece of the film, a trailer, if you will, from the 2013 film we're talking about, Escape from Tomorrow. Let's get into it, guys.
Here we go. Did you know? Let's talk a little bit about facts and figures.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot of did you knows on this
one. A little bit of did you know, a little bit of trivia on this film. First of all, written and directed by first-timer, I think I said this before.
Randy Moore.
You know the name, Randy Moore.
It's burned in my brain.
It is burned in your brain.
You're right.
Interesting. This is obviously a big project for him, first time out.
It's a very audacious project, for sure.
I was looking for a word, and he said it, audacious.
That's a good word
for it. The audacity of this man.
How dare he?
No, but it's a bold interpretation of something. That's for sure. We'll get into that in a minute.
Yeah.
Some facts. Filmed at Disney World and Disneyland without permission.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's audacious.
Yeah. Right. I couldn't differentiate. I've never been either one of these places. Have you ever been to Disney
World? No, I never have either.
I've been to one. I've been to the one in Florida.
That's Disney World.
Epcot. Yeah. I call it Epcot.
Yeah. Did it explode as a giant ball and roll down and crush people?
No, but the whole time I'm watching this, I'm thinking, hey, that's where I was when I found out OJ was found not guilty.
Oh, really? That's where it was.
Yeah.
That's where you were.
Yeah,
and everything was okay.
Yeah, we all recall. We all recall.
And cool. All was right with the world.
Yep. Everything was great.
Before it all went wrong. The dialogue. The dialogue about a death at Thunder Mountain in this film is a reference to the real death at Disneyland. On September 5th, 2003, did you know that a 22-year-old man died when a car on the Big Thunder Mountain Railroad ride derailed?
No.
However, he was not decapitated as it was in this film.
Oh.
No, I didn't know
that. Yeah. Glad to hear that.
Yeah. Anytime someone's not decapitated, pretty good news.
I seen when I was in class.
Did you know that did you know that when the nurse suggests that there might be a cat flu going around Disneyland, this is not as far-fetched as it sounds, as Disney has 5 permanent feeding stations for feral cats.
Yep, what? I did know that.
That's insane.
They're everywhere.
Keeps the population in check.
It probably keeps the mice down.
Keeps
and
the mice down. Yeah. You want mice in Disney World.
Ironically.
Yeah, symbiotic.
There's a good chance that if I went to Disney World with my wife, the main attraction would be the feral cat stations. Rides? Right. What rides? Right. Look at those kitties over there.
Right, right.
Did you know that when the other woman is having sex with Jim and says, I think you found my hidden Mickey, she is referencing the fact that there are hidden Mickeys, overlapping circles constituting images of Mickey's, hidden all over the Disneyland theme park. Earlier, when the camera pans over to the amulet on her chest, a hidden Mickey is formed by the amulet. Am I saying that right?
Yeah. Amulet.
There you go. Yeah. And her breasts. It looks like Mickey's ears.
If you say so.
I wasn't
looking at the amulet.
Nope, you're looking at the ears.
Did you know that first-time director Randy Moore had the actors ride through It's a Small World attraction 12 times to get the scene right?
That's pure hell.
That is pure hell.
They're pros. They're pros. Yeah.
Did you know that the mention of turkey legs actually being emu meat in the movie is a reference to an old, existing, though of course untrue, urban legend about Disney?
Yeah, right.
Born out of the fact that the turkey legs are quite large. I don't know what that means.
Yeah, they're genetically modified.
That's a dumb fact. Why'd I read that one? Who cares?
Because they're emu legs.
It's not even a fact. It's not even a real fact.
Yeah, all right, it's a fake fact.
So let's get into it, guys. You know, we're going to rate this film as well. 1 to 10 something or other.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't do stars or thumbs up here. No. Why is that?
Because it's stupid.
It's dumb. It's so stupid. So let's talk about that. 1 to 10, this film, 2013, Escape from, I almost said New York.
We were waiting for it.
Right?
Oh,
you
man.
Will say it.
I actually bit my lip just a little bit trying to hold that back in. Escape from Tomorrow. We're going to use, I think, emu legs.
Is that what it is, Adam?
Sure, yeah.
Buddy, you down with that, emu legs?
Yeah, they're really big.
Yeah,
you really only need one.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, she didn't say emu legs in the movie, though. At first, she said human.
What?
Did you catch that? Yeah.
I didn't pick up on that.
We'll get into that in a second. All right, emu legs. All right. Let's go over to the producer. 1 to 10 emu legs. What you going with?
I understand why people loved and hated this film, but I'm a little bit above the middle, so I'm going to go 6.
Going to go 6.
Yeah.
You found it of interest, but maybe didn't hold together.
I liked it, but I'm confused, but I have my own little theory about it.
I'm confused, but I'm used to that.
Yeah. Nice. So, yeah. Okay. That may be a common consensus. I have no idea. I said we go over to the patron saint of high-quality outerwear.
Yeah.
That's Matthew St. Hoodie. What are you going with?
6 human legs.
Human legs? Did you say human? What did you say?
Did I? What?
No, I'm sorry. Emu legs.
Yeah, human legs.
I'm glad you picked up on that. I was not the only one. You know what I'm talking about.
I can't hear, though, so.
Okay.
I didn't question it for a second. I was like, oh, that's just me being, you know, old.
We got 6. We have 6. We're going for another 6. We're calling on Lucifer here. How many are you going for, Savage? Well, emu legs. What you going with?
Watch my horn sprout. I got to go with the 6. It's, I understand what they were doing, so I got to give them a little above average because they succeeded in what they were doing.
Mm-hmm.
but I can't go more than that. So six.
I'm going six emu legs on this thing. Exactly right. Reasons to appreciate it. Reasons to get invested early. A lot of reasons to turn it off. About 20 minutes left in the film. Right. But there's some things here I kind of like. Right. So I can't go too bad on it. Right. I'm going six. I'm going to jump on the six train. Max, the pressure is on.
It's a four of a
the
kind.
The pressure
right
is on. We've never had a full house. We've never had a royal flush, whatever you call it.
We've never had a five of a kind.
We never had a five of a kind.
Five of a kind. Wow, so, that would be the greatest hand ever.
And then we all remember the American.
Yeah.
Yeah, we remember the American.
Yes, we do.
So you sandbag are so close. We can let that slide. How many are you going to go with emu legs?
Six.
Oh, yes. Oh, there it is. Yes! We did it!
I'd come in with a six already, and I was thinking, gosh, you know, I could go up a little bit on this. I think if I watched it a couple more times, I probably would. But right now, yeah, I got to stick with a six.
God, can you feel the love? And this is a show where I think we all needed to get on the same page.
Yeah.
Did you just quote Lion King?
I have never seen Lion King.
What?
What?
I've never seen that movie.
It's a Disney movie.
He just stole your line, Max. You've never seen the Lion King.
Yeah.
No, you're supposed to say y'all.
Yeah. Okay, we'll get to that.
Yeah. All right. So there it is. Nicely done. We have
a consensus.
Yeah, we have 30.
A consensus, yeah. So
emu legs.
Yeah, that math is easy.
And I'm sure our reasons are different.
I didn't have to carry the one or nothing. Right. All right, so let's get into this, guys.
Maths ain't hard no more.
Okay, so let's roll with this one. Let's go over to the producer. Let's hear about his reaction to this film, why he went six on Escape from Tomorrow. So go ahead and talk, producer. Tell us why.
Okay, first of all, I love the concept of how they filmed this. That's astonishing to me. I thought it was just amazing that they could sneak into this place and film an entire movie without Disney knowing.
They cut it close a couple times.
Yeah.
Right.
They were on the run a couple times.
But I was intrigued by it. I think the beginning of this movie is brilliant. I really enjoyed it. When it got to intermission, that's when it got a little crazy. And,
yeah.
Yeah.
That's where it threw me off. Of course, I'm sure it threw off everyone else.
Mm-hmm.
But I really wished I could have had a definitive answer on everything that I've seen. And
I don't think there is one. I don't think they, I don't think they went for one.
No.
Yeah. But yeah, other than that, I thought it was a great movie. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, yeah. I may follow your path a little bit too. I thought the intro, the beginning was like, man, okay, all right, you'll see where you're going here. What you got? Okay, what you got? Okay, man, what you got? Anyways, yeah. I want to know what you got, and that's Matthew St. Hoodie. You went six as well. I can't wait to talk about some of these scenes though, because I'm just curious about them. I'm intrigued.
Curious.
I'm more intrigued about what you have to say about this film and why you gave it a six. So go.
When Max saw it, he talked to me and said, I want to know what you think of this movie. So I went into this already thinking it's going to be the craziest, weirdest thing. And it was. I mean, it delivered. I'm with Adam. Go figure. I liked the beginning, but as it progressed, I liked it less and less. And then crazy ending, I thought it was just him trying to throw just as much weird at us as he could. I started off thinking that this was like a retelling of almost a fairy tale with the two girls leading him into, you know, like the dark forest almost.
Yeah.
The evils of Disney World, Disneyland. And that didn't pan out. I couldn't connect that at all.
No, it really didn't.
But, basically, yeah, Disney World is a bad place. that's all you need to know.
It's the happiest place on earth.
It's just the worst, most awful place in the world.
It's a front.
But yeah, I really think that's what this is about. And you look at this guy's childhood too. I've read up on the director trying to figure out where he was
find
coming.
Anything on this guy?
Oh, basically he lived in Orlando and his parents were going through a divorce, and he was always around Disney World, and he associates the happiest place on earth with some of the worst times in his life.
Yeah.
So the main character in the movie, what's his
name?
Jim White.
Jim White. Being, you know, the drunk scene is basically his father with the alcoholism and all of that. So, I mean, once I read that, I was kind of like, oh, okay, this is kind of autobiographical to a sense, but it still didn't make any sense.
It's an odd film. You know what? I want to ask your opinion real quick on the technical merit, because the thing that grabbed me was like, man, this thing looks pretty good. I mean, if this is as low budget as they say, it's paced well, it's put together well. I thought it had a great exterior to it. I'm looking at it on screen going, that looks pretty good. I thought it was well shot. I like the black and white. Did you have the same reaction to some of that?
The only thing that threw me, the green screen stuff, that was just bad. But I understand that, so I kind of forgave it of that. He can't get every shot that he needs to because of the way he's filming it.
That actually reminded me of a lot of the old Disney films, how bad the green screen was back then. It
I can't speak to that. I don't even know.
Yeah, they're mostly animated.
A lot of Disney.
Yeah, but I think I read somewhere that it was black and white out of necessity.
I don't know.
Really
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, you can't
but,
color.
But honestly, it really works in black and white.
It does.
Very well.
Because it kind of had that happy, everything's good 1950s kind of feel to it where life was just fantastic, right? And everybody was happy.
Father knows best.
That kind of father knows best thing.
Yeah.
Anyways, yeah.
Drunk
yeah.
fathers know
yeah.
best.
So yeah, I got a few things, but not really. I mean, I'm
So you're not going to sit here and say, okay, Michael, the end was this. This is what you really saw. This is why it makes sense. You don't got that? You don't have that for me?
He may.
No,
he
may.
We're not talking about scenes yet.
Well, it's not scenes. I'll get into it a little bit. I really think that this movie is just saying that the greatest place on earth, according to Disneyland, is still a corporate company that's trying to get your money and then yep. suck all the life out of you. Yep. And Jim, if you will, he really wanted love and affection and respect. And yeah. that's what the park took from him.
He sure the hell wasn't getting that from his wife.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. His wife wanted the perfect family, and that's what the park took from her. Tech took away her perfect family. And, yeah. you know, so I kind of saw this park as just being like this yeah. most evil entity that we all know and love.
Yeah, I can't wait. I want to go. I want to go over to Hearts Up Savage. Yeah. You know what the irony is here? You stubbed your toe earlier today, didn't
I
you?
I did.
And in this film, there was a wicked stubbed toe scene.
Geosporin.
That, yeah. yeah, Geosporin. Mm-hmm. Product placement.
Yeah.
there's no such thing as Geosporin.
Right.
How ironic, though. He stubs his toe. Yeah.
They should get that going, because that guy, yeah. I mean, those they can really fill a tube.
Yeah. yeah. They know how to jam it there.
right, right.
If you've seen this movie, yeah.
Yeah.
Sporin.
There you go. A little jingle for you. But you stubbed your toe, as did Jim. And we're talking yeah. about Jim in the film 2013. Escape from Tomorrow, that you gave a 6 to.
I did.
So talk to me. Why?
I loved the audacity of this. I'm with Adam. I think the concept and the just the mechanics of trying to pull something off like this, it's almost like a military crusade. It's like,
yep.
we're going to do this. This is David Goliath kind of stuff. I mean, and Disney, make no mistake, is Goliath. Randy Moore knew that he may get sued. He's going to mm-hmm. try to pull this off. And so it was the adventure of it. It's the audacity of it. It's like, yeah. how dare you try to pull this off?
That you end up rooting for them because.
Well, you do. I mean, when you know the logistics of it, but it goes back to your point. When you start watching it, they pulled it off fairly well.
I thought they did.
It's like it's a movie. You don't get the sense that this is like some guerrilla filmmaking.
Not at all.
Most of the shots don't even have branches in front of the camera.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, you don't get the sense that there's this immediacy or there's the attempt to hide.
Yep.
They filmed it with regular video cameras that anyone could purchase.
Yeah. yeah. Well, and of course they must have, you know, they're not going to have a boom guy. They're not, you know, they're not going to have a sound guy. Those things could not have been in place. So they pulled it off incredibly well.
Speaking of needing a boom.
All right. I love that. I just love that sense of adventure. And it's like, let's do this thing.
Yeah.
And then they pulled it off. And the story seemed fairly good. I say fairly good because I don't understand why the necessity for him to have his lose his job. I mean, there seemed to be these placements of drama just for dramatic effect. It's like, oh, he's lost his job. So maybe that explains why he's tripping.
Well, it opens up with him losing his job. And I think that automatically goes, okay, this is a bad day.
Well,
you know, and nothing's worse than that, right?
Well, so. No, I think they try to leverage that to this is why he's doing this. This yeah. is why he's starting to trip. But then the nurse comes in and it's like, then they introduce
yeah.
this potential pathogen and then,
yeah, yeah.
And then the story starts okay. to meander.
Yeah, I was going to say meandering. Yeah. And there's a lot of that.
Yeah.
I was just really thinking kind of like Computer Chess and some of these other films. Like, I'm going to come in here. Someone's going to tell me the big reveal here, the yeah. big secret.
Right.
I don't think I'm going to get that out of you
guys. No, and
I don't think it's there to get. Okay.
No, and I don't believe it's there to get either. I mean, yep. because the obvious tension that they set up between the son and the father, where the son
I hated that little kid.
Yeah.
He had like a
snotty little
Oedipus complex, in love with his mom, trying
yeah,
to kill his
exactly.
dad.
Exactly. Yeah. And that may be more the autobiographical thing that, mm-hmm. that's going on. So I think it was one of this like shoehorn in story ideas because we're pulling this off.
Yeah.
We're pulling this off. We might actually make a movie and we haven't been shut down by Disney. Let's put in all these story yeah. things.
Yeah.
And so you end up with a story that doesn't really mean anything.
I'm with you. You know, as much as I picked up on the sense that, okay, they're pulling this off, it doesn't feel like a guerrilla film. The set seemed real. It seemed tight.
Oh,
someone
yeah.
was a pro here with the camera, I thought.
But at the same time, I picked up on the idea that they got there. So, okay, guys, let's make a movie. Oh, heck, what about a script? I forgot about the script.
Apparently, he worked on some big ideas. For like 10 years or something.
Really? Well, you know, I don't know.
He wrote the script, put it away, wrote a couple more, and went back to it, and then said, okay, let's go for it.
I kind of feel like I'm liking this film the more I look back at it, though, but I want to go to Max Gumbo Johnson. Max Gumbo Johnson coming in 6, rounding it out across the board 6. Tell me why. What do you have on this film?
I don't want to belabor the point about the shooting of the thing, you know, it actually being filmed at Disneyland or Disney World, because the big deal was... When the film came out, it premiered at the film festival and blah, blah, blah. And everyone said, oh, my God, these guys are going to get sued. And
yeah.
Disney did nothing.
Right.
They said, eh, we're not even going to pay
any
credence.
They ignored it.
They just ignored it. I mean, and to be honest, this isn't like the CIA or the Pentagon you're going up against. This is Disney. Yeah. This is big stuff.
This is way worse.
Yeah. This is Major League, buddy. This is Disney.
Not to interrupt, but if you go to the Escape from Tomorrow website, there's the escapefromtomorrow.com, and there's a clock, and it says, time not sued by Disney.
Is it really that on there?
Really. It really is, and it's a clock.
Is
it's
it like, still running?
It's still running.
Yeah. But you know, I think
they're safe.
I think Disney also has an opportunity to be the good guy. See, we're not going to sue you. We're nice. Right. So maybe they're using that in their favor.
Sure.
Like, talk about the Pentagon. At the Pentagon, you don't see hordes of people with Roll Tide shirts rolling around in the background.
You never know. But yeah, that was the big allure of the movie when it first came out. Everybody's like, oh, I got to see this thing. And I'm the same way. You know, I saw, oh gosh, it's playing at the Belcourt for 2 nights. I got to see this thing. Went in and I was like, okay, I kind of see what's going on here. I left and I was like, what in the hell did I just watch?
Yeah.
Did any of y'all watch it more than once?
I did, twice.
Twice? Okay, I watched it a couple more times. I'm starting to kind of piece together a little more. It grows on you as you watch it. And I'm not necessarily a proponent of having to watch a movie 17 times before
you're
really glom onto it. I mean, unless it's like Raising Arizona or Blade Runner.
Right.
But it does grow on you. You do pick up little things here and there as you're watching it the more you watch it. And you start to get a better sense of a narrative and what everything means the more you watch it. But again, I mean, how much time can you devote to watching a movie over and over and over?
Especially this movie.
I mean, yeah, it's only an hour and a half long, but it's like, I'm not going home tonight and watching it again to pick up more on it. I think a little more straight, more narrative would have helped the cause a lot more. Especially considering the risk this guy took to make this thing and even get it released.
Yeah.
To make it something a little more, I don't want to use the word pedestrian, I hate that. But
digestible.
Yeah, to make it something a little more less baffling.
I understand.
Would it help the movie?
Yeah, it would have. I like the ambiguous thing. I like the head scratcher. We've had a few of them. You know,
yeah, I don't mind that at all.
Upstream
big
color.
Fan. Big fan.
You know that it might be a microscopic thread, but there's something there holding it together. I didn't even sense that here at the end. And I was hoping I could, but, you know, this film's built on several things. These individual scenes, you know, and also the technical aspect of, which I thought was kind of nice. That's the, where some of these dolls come alive, where some of the spooky stuff happens in the tunnel.
And the thing with the spooky stuff, is none of it's actually spooky stuff. That's actually what's there. But when you watch it in that context with that music playing in black and white with the camera moving around, it will creep you out.
It will creep you out. My point is that all the stuff that it's built with was at least there, despite the narrative I couldn't follow, to hold my interest.
Mm-hmm.
Every scene was like, okay, give me another one. Okay. It wasn't like it turned me off to the point to where I couldn't watch it. It's just as a movie, it just really became... meandering, as James said.
Muddled.
Ooh, good word, muddled.
Convoluted.
So let's talk about some of these individual scenes, guys. Mm-hmm. And let's go over to Matthew St. Hoodie to start this one up. I'm doing it. When you talk about scenes in this film, ones that stand out, rise to the top, make you scratch your head, make you take your hoodie off, get angry, and throw it in a ball in the corner because you're frustrated, what are you going to go with? Talk about a scene in this film.
I can't really talk about a scene. Let's start with the ending, though.
The ending, okay.
I'll just randomly put it out there. Does anybody have any ideas about the ending?
Thank you for going there. That's what I was going to say.
Oh, Adam.
Oh, God.
I do.
Adam, okay.
He's been thinking.
Yeah. I think that there's so much crazy stuff that goes on this behind the scenes from Disney World that you never know what's going to happen with it.
That's the ending?
That's the ending.
Mm. I was hoping for a little more in-depth
substance.
Nuance on it.
No.
more nuance. Right.
So you just say it's crazy, and that's the
that's it.
That's the calling card of this one. It's crazy. So here's crazy.
So it's a Japanese game show.
Yeah. It's crazy.
Welcome to Crazy Japanese Game Show number one.
Hey, Max. You know, I think that is going to be the overarching thing here, though. People are going to watch this film. They're going to turn it off and go, what kind of ending was this? Because you so desperately wanted to be something that you missed that makes it all come together.
Thank you.
Anybody else? What about you? Did you get anything out of that ending that would possibly tie it up?
You know what? The only thing I got without having to go back and watch it again and again and again and again, Jim almost seemed like at the end when you saw him go back into the park with the girl that said you'll be mine, you'll be mine. Just be careful. You'll see, you'll be mine. It almost seemed to me like to be symbolic of a recycling of this thing over and over and over again. Yeah. That this I hate to use the word consumerism. It's so cliched.
Yeah.
But it seems like they just keep wrapping people into the same thing over and over. And here's this guy, he had a family, and it's just the same. He's representative of the same person or the same family being roped in again, over and over and over to do the same thing.
Okay.
Somewhat.
But when the girl actually comes up to him, the evil, as I put it.
Right. Which one? The Pocahontas Eva. Girl
one of the two girls with the braces on.
Right. Oh, the French girls.
Yeah.
The spitter?
Yeah. They come up and says, come with us. And he's like, no, I can't do it. Spits on him, right? So I kind of took that as like he rejecting what all Disneyland had to, basically how it defined itself, what it was. The evil, I don't know. Why do I keep calling it evil?
I don't know.
But you know what I mean. I mean, this isn't a good place in this movie. It's very dystopia.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So he rejects that, and I just wrote down, he doesn't drink the Kool-Aid, so it kills him.
Yeah.
Well, listen, in the beginning, I rewound this several times and watched it in the beginning. It's a great shot. The credits are going with this roller coaster as it's going up the hill, down the hill.
Yeah, yeah.
There's a spot in that film where the final credit comes up, and someone loses their head in the back of that car.
I see.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Was that Jim's head? Did Jim die? And is this the last something or other of Jim's existence as he's stuck in Disneyland? I think Jim died in the beginning, and this is that fleeting bit of life that's left in his body as it's purging out of him at the end. Is that it? And he's reincarnated as this guy at the end?
I don't know. That's just as valid as anybody else.
If that was the case, then why would he come back with the beautiful woman all dressed to the nines?
Because the afterlife is beautiful.
First viewing is, all right, that's interesting.
I don't know. I think that maybe anybody's right and everybody's wrong. Maybe there isn't a definitive thing here.
No, there's certainly not.
What did you get out of this whole thing?
To me, this was, we're getting away with this. Let's see how far we can get away with it and start throwing things out. Mm-hmm. And then they realized that not only are they getting away with it, but damn, now we got to make a story out of this.
Now
somehow.
I have to write an ending.
Right.
Yep. That was my thought too. Yeah.
And it really felt like that. I mean, everything kind of felt tacked on. I mean, nothing seemed like it was connecting the dots. It was like, it almost like we're getting away with this. Okay. Let's do this now. Okay. Yep. Let's do this now. Okay. Mm-hmm. Let's do this now. And you can tell that the green screen stuff, which was obviously different, that's where they tried to bridge the gap between what they were getting away with and what story they were trying to tell.
There was almost a sense of, hey, I got an idea.
Right.
I completely disagree with that.
Do you?
Completely disagree with that.
What?
You are not going to take the chance. But first off, you're not going to spend the money on however many tickets it costs to get all these guys into Disney World. That's probably half their budget.
They got a season pass.
You're looking at $50 to $60 per day.
Season pass.
Okay, that's $400 a piece, something like that. It's crazy money to get in there. You're not going to go in there, take the risk to film this incognito, maybe get caught, maybe get sued off your ass, and not have a script going in. These guys knew exactly what they were going in there to film.
I disagree with that.
They had a total story written out. To this guy, Randy Moore, every scene in this movie played out exactly the way he wanted it to play. The story plays out exactly like he wants it to play. It's completely crafted just like he wants it. We just don't understand.
Maybe so.
I agree with Max.
I agree with Max.
It's hard to say. Randy Moore would have to be here and tell us.
Right.
You know, I don't know. What about the acting in this film? The performances, I tried to not like them.
You tried to not like them?
I tried to find reasons why, okay, this is why I'm not liking this film.
Because it's gimmicky. On its surface, it's gimmicky. This is a gimmicky movie.
But let me tell you this, though. I did like the performances. I thought everybody was really good in this as far as what they were given to do. I thought the kids were good.
Yeah.
I mean, the interactions of the children and the parents were great, but what did you think of that?
No, when Adam chose it, and then it's like, oh, it's the gorilla under the radar Disney movie. Automatically, okay, that's the gimmick. This is what they're going to try to do. So I understand that. It's like, all right, we're going to hate these actors because they're just trying to pull off this thing.
Yeah.
But it it was more solid than that.
Yeah.
It really was. I mean, mm-hmm. and I think we've all kind of established that. It's like, you didn't feel that. It doesn't feel that way. It doesn't feel gimmicky.
It's an interesting film like that. It doesn't feel like what you think it's going to feel
exactly,
like.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And I think the acting was solid.
Yeah.
Did you feel like a lot of it was improv?
No, I think the dad did a great job.
I didn't feel like a lot of it was improv. Some of it, yeah.
Adam, you said you liked the dad, Jim.
I thought he did a great job.
I did too.
He looked... I thought he was a typical sleazy dad.
Typical sleazy dad?
He's your typical sleazy dad.
No, he's your typical dad who's in this family, just wants a break from everything. Yeah. He lost his job. He just wants a hot girl.
Yeah. Listen, they needed a 40-year-old guy to show up with a midlife crisis, and I thought this guy seemed to fit that mold. I enjoyed that. And Max, I want your opinion on a real big backbone of his story is his relationship with the women in this film.
Yeah,
his daughter, his wife, and these two French. What are they? What do you want to call them?
Sprite stamps?
Sprites. Did you like all of that, the interaction of the people? There's a lot of interaction of people here. Did all of that kind of hold your interest?
Yeah, it did. I couldn't stand the wife. Couldn't stand her. She treated him like a little boy. And that scene where he's in the pool, he's like, you didn't put sunscreen on. And she's like, come on. You know, he's
like, Florida.
He throws this little fit.
That's a typical mother, though.
No, it's not. Yeah. She did that really well because that was her whole role was to
be a nagging mother and wife.
Yeah, so you kind of understood this guy like looking over her shoulder at the two pretty girls like, oh, I wish.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. But when you said midlife crisis, I mean, it starts out with him losing his job. Okay, here he is. He's 40 years old. He's on the last day of vacation at Disney with his kids. You don't want to go tell your wife and kids, oh, by the way, that was my boss. I just lost my job. Let's go hit Space Mountain.
Yeah, but no, it was even better. I mean, he loses his job. The kid locks him out.
On purpose.
On purpose, and then runs to bed and jumps on top of his wife.
What? Basically, just middle fingers.
I like the people in the film. I like the way they interacted with each other. They were believable to me. I had every reason to believe Jim wanted away from that woman, his wife, and go with these two women over here. I mean, every single one of them.
That was another fantastic. Another fantastic scene when him and his son were leaving on the monorail. He says, oh, those girls are pretty. Oh, you think they're pretty? What's your idea of pretty? I was like, you know, blah, blah, blah. He said, well, is mom pretty? Yeah, in sort of a Emily Dickinson Tina Fey kind of way. Yeah.
Later on, she yells at him, I look like Emily Dickinson.
See, and that's something
I like Emily Dickinson.
When he said that, I thought, well, thank God she didn't hear that. Of course, the son runs back and tells her.
Of course.
Hey, can I talk about the worst part of this film? Let's all talk about the part of the film that made you go, okay, come on. For me, I thought the whole Epcot thing when he's stuck in there with the scientist, I didn't like any of that. That just made me go, what are you doing? Anybody else?
I actually like that part because it reminded me of Westworld and Stepford Wives from back in the day.
Of course it did.
That's exactly what I thought of with all the animatronics.
To me, it was
because Disney can do the animatronics really well.
To me, it was just another kind of episode of what can we fit in here?
Yeah,
and you can tell you can tell what was shot on site, on location.
Yeah.
Well, and you can tell what was not. And that was one of those scenes where they could pull it off. I mean, mm-hmm. when you had the time,
which goes back to what Max is saying, that this is a very well thought out thing. If it wasn't a thought out thing, then he wouldn't have needed the green screens to, mm-hmm. you know,
you're
push
right.
The plot.
Okay.
Or you use it after the fact to fit in to try to connect the dots of what you shot.
That didn't connect any dots.
We're just missing.
Exactly. Because no dots have been connected.
But I think that Matt and Max here are saying that there is. We just don't know what it is.
No.
And maybe that's true.
Well, I think it's totally connected. We just.
Randy Moore has outsmarted all of us. That's is what you're saying, point. Right?
I wouldn't say he's outsmarted us. I think he's just written this thing in a way that it's something that is so personal to him that we cannot nail everything down and can't understand everything he's trying to say, without like really dissecting this thing.
Yeah.
Frame for frame.
I think it can be done. That's why I went back and looked at
I
his
disagree.
Life to see what was going on. It's almost too autobiographical to make sense to anybody who
you know
is
what
not
this
him.
Is. I just figured this out.
Uh-oh.
This is a retelling of Dante's Inferno.
No.
What do you think?
That's what this is.
I think this is a matter of convenience. I think he pulled off what he could, and he's like, look what we could do.
You know, this is a fun movie.
And that's not a slight. I'm not saying that in a slight way. I mean, he pulled off something special. I mean, the audacity of it, I'm amazed at, and the slickness of it, and the professionalism, and then the fact that it doesn't look like he tried to pull something off.
Yeah.
It just looks like he made a movie that doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, I just wish that you could say, oh, yeah, Escape from Tomorrow, that's a great movie. Oh, by the way, it was Gorilla Shot in Disney
yeah.
World.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You can kind of compare it to Monsters that way.
It almost seems too smart for its own good, in a way.
I don't know about that.
I don't either.
Whatever. I sense professionalism. I sense.
Oh, very much.
I sense good chemistry.
Yes.
I sensed really good technical merit.
Yes.
I sense no narrative that I could even make sense of. Although the first 30 minutes are good. The first 30 minutes, you're like, okay, man, this is really going to be a place I want to go. Almost like a ride. You know, after a while, it's like, okay, the ride's over. Why am I still on the thing?
Exactly. Yeah. That's a good way to put it. It's like a ride. It's like a ride on Disney. In yeah. Disney World.
It's an
you get
ticket.
On the ride.
I want to ask Max about the toilet scene.
I didn't not enjoy any of it.
That's they went talk about going for a scene.
I don't know why they blurred out his butt. What's that?
Yeah, what was that? What was with the it looked like a Japanese pixelated movie yeah. that I got on a Pinky video or something.
Yeah.
What is this?
Your Japanese yeah. pixelation.
They'll show some
right.
breasts, but blur out a butt.
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe he's just shy about his
I
butt
think
crack.
So. I think so.
Hey, he hacked up a hairball at the
I
end.
I thought
too,
that was pretty so. Cool. I really did. I liked it. I liked
flu.
I did because I was like, okay, he's just, you know, I knew what was coming, but I didn't realize when he started hacking up the fur balls. I thought that was fantastic.
And he had his
and then
eye.
He turned into a cat, and I was like, I'm out. That's give me a break.
Done.
And of course, at the end, the French vixens, the pixies, they end up as the little fairies floating around the end credits with their wings sprouted out.
Well, and yeah, and he ends up with the Pocahontas chick,
yeah.
and the girl that seduced him about the emu leg was
yeah.
the evil witch.
What about the fat guy in
everybody
the wheelchair?
I did not get the guy in the rascal scooter. What
because
was
it didn't
deal
go
with
anywhere.
Guy?
It didn't go anywhere.
It meant something. It meant something.
Definitely
it's
something.
Just a,
yeah, but his daughter laying on the bed.
Insert.
Yeah,
this
his daughter laying
like
in the bed with the
beauty
flowers and stuff. Yeah.
And it's she like, kissed him and she woke up.
Sleeping Beauty.
Yeah.
So they're all, like I was saying, fairy tale. It was in here somewhere, and I kept going, oh, there's a fairy tale, and I couldn't figure out what character he was, because he wasn't a prince.
No.
No.
He was, to his daughter, he was.
Maybe he was the dwarves.
Maybe
I
so.
Guess.
Maybe I wasn't upset.
Quasimodo.
That.
Yeah, could
maybe
be.
Maybe the guy on the wheelchair was a dragon.
Maybe it was Baloo, because he was hairy.
Anybody here disappointed that they watched the film, felt like it was 2 hours
no.
they wanted back.
No.
Anybody here feel like, okay, this was a complete failure?
No.
No, I mean, there's something here to grab onto.
Yeah.
That's the way I feel about it. It's just so weird.
Yeah. And
it
I think
weird.
We all went 6 because it's above average, and we all yeah. can say that it's something that you should watch. It's
yeah.
There's something about this film that you should watch. Should you watch it more than once?
You have to, yeah.
Final words on this one. Adam, let's go over to you. You queued this thing up, so give me the final word on this. Anything you want to get into?
No. I
think you covered it.
I did. I just
yeah.
really want to know more about it.
Leave me with a nugget of something interpreted here. What?
I can't.
Okay, never mind.
I can do is tell you what I thought, and I think that's all anybody can take out of this movie is, yeah. what you take away from it, what you find it to mean. But at the same time, I think there is... There's something here that is just too difficult. If I could read someone that really gets this movie and says, yeah. okay, here's what happened, I would cherish yeah. that. I'd be like, okay,
yeah.
and I'd go back and watch it again.
Did it make you want to have 2 kids?
It made me want to be. it made me glad all I have is a dog.
Did it make you want to go to Disneyland?
It made yeah.
Did it make you want to have a wife in Disneyland?
Did you reminisce at all?
Well, I did have a wife in Disneyland, so let's not go there.
Okay, sorry.
I had a wife and 2 kids in Disney World. Do you want to bring these things up to me again?
Right.
That was the greatest time of my life. Yeah.
Just rub a little Geosporin on it. You'll be fine. What about
you,
Hoodie?
The Geosporin scene.
Bringing that up, it was kind of nostalgic. I remember standing in line with my dad for, you know, an hour and a half to
hour
get into
half.
Space Mountain, mm-hmm. and I remember the gun range.
Really?
And, yeah, I went to the gun range every day as the first stop when I was mm-hmm. in Disneyland.
Yeah.
See, we went to Cedar Point. I grew up in the Upper Midwest, so Cedar Point was where it was at.
Yankee.
Never went to Disneyland. Yeah.
So, yeah, it was nostalgic a little bit, and that was kind of nice. But, yeah, basically all this thing is saying is that Disneyland's evil. Right, corporations are bad,
right.
and they all will eat your soul.
Yeah, yeah. and maybe that's what they're saying. But you should watch this film because the mechanics of it. It's the audacity of the filmmaking. This is what you can do if you choose to do a guerrilla filmmaking thing. And it's amazing what they've pulled off on the sly, as professional as it is.
Yeah.
It's worth watching for that. I mean, forget the narrative, forget the story, forget they pulled off, Randy Moore pulled off something incredible, and you should watch it.
Yeah, I'm going to leave it with this, and that is the guys from Jackass should have been involved in this one.
No,
and
cleavage should have been nowhere near it.
And cleavage is outerwear.
They're too celebrity. They're too celebrity. Those guys are.
Yeah. And they're such jackasses.
All right, guys.
Actually, I want to apologize to my parents for when I was younger for taking me to Disneyland. And if I acted like any of these kids, I am so sorry.
You're acting like one now. There's 2013, Escape from. Almost said New York.
You almost said. I was waiting.
Escape from Tomorrow. Thank you, Adam. No, you're not. You're a beautiful child. Escape from Tomorrow. Guerrilla filmmaking from Randy Moore. A lot of people talked about this film, popped up on Netflix. Producer said, let's cue it. Let's review it. We did that. So there you go. And as promised, we did catch up with Roy Abramson, star of the film. And here's a little piece of that interview that we had from earlier today. I think Roy's going to tell us how he almost got caught. They were almost taken down by the in the House of the Mouse.
The Disney police.
The Disney police, yeah. So enjoy that. Here you go.
One time a guy came up to me. We went in early on, and it was like 9 a.m. We walked through the park, and it was a shot where we're entering the park. You don't even see, it's not in the movie anymore. It was cut. But it's a shot where the family is entering Disneyland. Mm-hmm. And then, so we do the shot, and then we go in the park, and then the DP would say, or the director would come up to me, rather, and say, hey, Roy, he would just kind of whisper to me, go like, hey, go back out and do it again. Make sure your son is in front of you, whatever the second take was. I mean, like sometimes on It's a Small World, we rode that ride 12 times, and that was a full day of one ride over and over and over.
Oh, my God. And that's the worst one to be stuck on.
I know. Believe me. I want that music out of my head. I couldn't stop. You know, it's like a nightmare. So we go in the park, and we do the shot again through the turnstiles, and a guy walks up to me with a big smile, and he goes, excuse me, sir. And here I am with my movie wife and my movie kids, and we're all wired mics and everything. And he comes up to me and says, excuse me, sir. Why did you come in the park twice in 7 minutes?
Mm-hmm.
And I looked at my movie wife, and I went, uh-oh, someone's watching this on the screen somewhere. And I thought quickly, and I said, oh, I left the sunscreen outside. I had to put sunscreen on the kids. I left it on the bench out there, and so I put it on and came back in.
Nice.
And then as I went to leave, and I went to leave, he said, are you a celebrity, sir? And I thought, oh, shoot, this guy's like seen me as like reporter number two on CSI. I really thought my ego was like, oh wow, he knows me, you know. And then I said, why do you think I'm a celebrity? He said, well, you know, there's paparazzi taking photos of you, and we have a certain way for celebrities to go through the park.
Oh,
there's a certain protocol. And I was like, what paparazzi? And then I realized, oh, he's talking about my camera guys.
Right.
And I looked around, and those guys had vanished. They nice. Were gone. I looked around, the director's gone. Even the mothers of the real mothers of the kids had gone somewhere. It was just me, my wife, and two movie kids.
Wow.
We were like, uh-oh. So I didn't know what to do. And then he led me in the park at Disneyland. He said, hey, I want you to wait right here. And he was getting some other security. And so I was waiting there, like at the front of Disneyland where all the parades start and everything.
Right.
And then he says to me, I want you to wait here. Don't go. And I said, my son needs to use the bathroom. Because I realized I had sound equipment on. And I was like, shit, I got to get the sound. And then my second thought was, not only do I have sound equipment on, and all of us do, we all have different last names on our IDs.
Wow. Yeah.
You know, we're all different. You know, right. we're not a real family. So I went in, and I took the sound equipment off, and I went to throw it in the garbage. I did the same with my son's.
Wow.
And then I realized, oh, my God, he could have weeks of,
yeah.
I didn't know what he had on his tear. So I didn't want to throw it, so I put it in my socks. I put them like in these white. I was wearing these white dad tube socks, you know,
yeah,
the kind of nerdy. Yeah. The nerdy dads wear with sandals.
Sure, we saw the movie. We know what you're wearing.
So then when I left, there was kind of a parade that started there, and there was kind of a hubbub. And I remember Goofy coming up to me and going, "Hi, how you doing, Mister? What's going on?" You know, and I saw this guy was kind of separated from us. He was with other security people.
Sure.
And I looked at my wife, who had done the same thing, and I just gave her a nod. And as we were, like, we should leave, our AD, who always wore a Goofy hat, oddly enough, in the park, he's a real Disney file, our first AD, would walk right by me quickly, like in a spy movie. He walked straight by me without looking at me, saying this, mumbling this, get out of the park, get out of the park right now, get in the white van in the parking lot, get out of the park now. Like, just like, it is like, she wasn't even looking at it, like, get in the white van in the parking lot, get in the white, you know. So I looked at my, so we went to the turnstiles and we walked quickly to them. And then when we hit the turnstiles, we were like at a full run to the van, the production van, and we all jumped in and the director was in there. And I remember sweat coming down from the guy's forehead and us looking out the back of this van. I said to him, what do we do now? And he goes, everyone go back to the hotels, go home. Just go home. We're going to figure out another way to do this.
Okay. Once again, thank you so much to Roy Abramson for stopping by and giving us a little piece of his time to talk about the film, Escape from Tomorrow, that we're talking about now. Really good stuff. So if you want to hear the full interview, we're going to have it up on our site. You can go there, qfilmcast.net. You can hear all of it in its entirety. And thank you, Roy Abramson. Really appreciate that. Well, this is a film that's on Netflix. If you want to watch it, you want a part of this conversation, let me tell you what. I challenge you, audience. If you watch this movie, if you can put these pieces together and so we can scratch our head and go, ah.
Write us a letter.
Yeah, you tell us. Somebody figure this one out.
Right.
2013, Escape from Tomorrow. That was the film right there we talked about. Inspires our top three, as they all do. Our top three movies. How am I saying this? Right. Made for under $1 million since the millennium, yeah. Since the year 2000. And I think, Savage, you came up with this one.
Yeah.
Why don't you lead it off, since you came up with this one? Let's talk about our top three films for $1 million or less.
Yeah. When I started researching this kind of concept, I realized that there were several old movies that we reviewed in the queue that were made for under $1 million since the new millennium.
More than I thought.
Movies that I really like. So yeah. I'm just sticking with the queue. And my number three will be the Nicholas Refn film, Bronson.
I can't believe that was for under $1 million. Max, did that shock you?
I could not believe that. When I saw, I could believe it was under $1 million, but when I saw how much way under him, it was like, holy crap, I can't believe they made that for that much money.
Right.
I can't believe that's your number three.
Yeah.
Yeah. You love that thing.
I do.
Yeah, so it's a good film.
What do you think the other two are going to be?
230K.
Computer chess.
Right.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah. And what was the actual budget on that film?
I have no idea.
$230,000.
I can't believe it. Everybody did it for free? It was a free, it was a twofer.
Or
it was
scale.
A free.
They must have.
Well, done it for scale.
Dude got a mustache out of it.
Yeah, he did.
Made of his actual hair. Remember that?
Oh, yeah. Right,
so they say. So I still can't.
Those things don't come free.
Still haven't seen that done, so I'm waiting.
Yeah. But let's talk about your number three film, made for under $1 million, producer. What is it?
Two Girls and a Guy.
That's the name of the film?
Yeah.
Two Girls and a Guy.
I'm glad it's not Two Girls and a Cup.
Two Girls? Who's
Savage.
Heard of this? What is
what?
This?
What? Nope. How do y'all not know this movie?
I've never seen it. I don't know what you're talking about, sir.
Okay.
Never heard of this. What year did this come out?
It's basically, what, three people sitting in an apartment the whole movie?
Yeah, he winds up cheating on these two girls, and they found out about it.
I've seen that. Yes, I've seen that.
And they sit there and confront the guy.
Interesting.
I thought it was a great film.
It was not bad. He's right. That was not a bad
movie.
How
much did it cost?
You would have to ask.
I thought that was part of it.
That was
under $1 million.
I wrote mine down.
It was under $1 million.
There you go.
Okay, so that's yours. Never heard of it?
I completely forgot about that movie. It's totally forgettable. Okay. It's not bad, but it's totally forgettable.
Right. Well, go to yours, Gumbo. Number three.
Me? My number three is Open Water, 2003, but reported budget between $150,000 and $500,000. There's no...
Really?
No,
that were
there's
just
no
sitting in the water?
Where they're just sitting in the water with real sharks.
That's a true story.
Surrounding them.
Have you seen this film?
It's based on a true story.
No, they're just bobbing in
you
the
talk
water.
About a way to save money.
Yeah.
Let's get some animals trying to... No, let's just throw some real sharks in there.
We're paying them, aren't we? Yeah.
Slow ahead. Chum some of this.
Lisa and I went and seen that in the theater. It was pretty good.
It was not a bad movie.
It was not a bad movie at all.
I've heard it's pretty good.
It's suspenseful. All
right. Yeah. Well, I'm going to scratch off my list. My list gets smaller and smaller all the time.
Every week.
Because, you know, every week I come in here, I'm going to champion this thing. Yeah. Let me give you my number three.
All right.
I'm staying in the queue. I'm going computer chess.
Oh, all right. Nice.
Yeah, I like that film. Max, you queued it up, and you liked it less than anybody.
Is that $1 million?
It has to be.
They had animatronics. And
honest to God, I didn't check, but it has to be.
I agree.
It's got to be, but we don't know that for sure unless you check.
Producer, produce that. Get on to it. Gumbo. All right, so we're moving on over to...
number twos.
No,
number
I two. Got mine.
Oh, wait, Hoodie, yeah, I'm so right. Sorry.
It hurts sometimes.
I'm so sorry. I do this every week. It's very confusing.
That's
very
right.
Challenging.
We'll just breeze right over it. Paranormal Activity scared the crap out of me for only $15,000.
Hated that film. What? Nothing scary in that film at all.
It's terrifying.
You're crazy. It terrified me as well.
It's terrifying.
It's creepy.
I don't fist think
bump.
I ever saw it.
Paranormal awful. Fist bump.
One of my most awful films. I hated it.
I don't think
film.
I ever saw it.
More than The Devil's Double?
No. All right. But
score one for
$15,000.
It made $193 million.
Wow.
That's a good return.
Like three sequels or that's something?
Five.
Like 15 now.
Wow.
What about you, Savage? Number two, what is it?
Number two, In the Queue, which we reviewed. I'm going with Brick. Under $1 million. Really good. I mean, it's a really good film.
What about you, Hoodie? We're up to number two. Wait, whose turn is it now?
It doesn't matter.
Go to heck, it's go on the table. Now we're going to Hoodie. Number two, what is it?
Another Earth.
I've not seen that.
Another Earth, yep.
Okay.
For $150,000.
The Will Smith thing? Couldn't have been.
No.
After Earth.
Oh, that seems more than $1 million.
Basically, there's another Earth that
I've seen it.
Encroaches. I'm talking to everybody. It encroaches upon this Earth. It's good.
All right.
I'd like to see it.
Yeah, what about you? Good answer, though.
Yeah, it's a good
another
movie.
One off my list.
You want to talk about a good ending? That's
like
a really 12 good
bucks
ending,
they made that movie for. $12.
I'm destined at this point to say Napoleon Dynamite, but producer, number two, what is it? What's it going to be?
Bubba Hotep.
Oh,
what?
Good look one. At that answer.
$1 million. That should
under
be number
$1 million.
One.
$1 million?
How
it's
much
not
was
my
it?
Number one. $1 million.
Oh, you're going straight millions. I'm picking
it
up
was
the theme.
It was
a dead up $1 million, man.
Well,
good answer.
$999,999.99. Right, that's
after tax.
What's your number two, Max? What's it going
to
be?
Number two, I'm going to have to go with Cheap Thrills from last year. $200,000.
Really?
Yep.
Not bad.
Another one I saw, gave $625 at the Bell Court at midnight to watch
there
that
you go.
Movie. And if it comes up on Netflix, we'll watch it.
All right.
It's like $13 now.
Well, I've had a couple on Netflix, it'll be free.
What's your number two, Maestro?
I've had a couple people tell me to watch that film. My number two? I'll tell you what, I'm going to go on a limb. It said no budget, but I can't imagine it being more than $1 million. I think I'm going to go with Drinking Buddies.
Oh, wow. That's great.
Have you seen this film?
I love that movie.
Really? I've thought about queuing that up.
It's great.
At one point. Drinking Buddies.
Don't know it.
It's great.
I
really
know who's in that film.
You want to talk about chemistry.
Olivia Wilde
is nothing but chemistry.
Yeah.
It killed.
I think that was right at $1 million from what I kind of dug around and got to. I'm going to go with Drinking Buddies. I'm going to go over to my number one Drinking Buddy, and that's Hard Sub Savage.
Yeah.
Number one, what's it going to be?
My favorite under $1 million movie that we've already reviewed in the queue, Monsters.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
I can't believe it. I mean,
you liked it more than Bronson?
I did.
No doubt.
Whoa. Yeah.
Sweet.
All right, let's get to our number ones. Hoodie, why don't you start that one out?
Even though I'm still a little upset that Glenn Hansard broke up the frames, I'm going to go with Once. It's a good movie.
Film.
Great
good stuff.
Film.
So good answer. Yeah. Number one for you, producer, what's it going to be?
Hard Candy.
Was that $1 million bucks?
Was that less than $1 million?
Less than $1 million. $950,000 to make.
Good answer.
That's really the
good.
Second time Hard Candy's come up in a while.
I like that.
Yeah, great film. And
yeah, it was a good movie.
Under a mil.
What about you? What about
not
you, Max?
The fall?
I'm going to have to go May 2002. $500,000 Luck in the Key.
Oh,
really?
Man.
Not bad. I've never seen this film. Keep hearing about it.
Oh, love that movie.
Really, May.
Yeah, it was great.
No doubt.
It was fantastic.
Lucky McGee.
I'm going to be obvious. I'm going to throw out Napoleon Dynamite. Why not? Yeah. It has to get said. That's a million, under
$1 million.
Somebody's
going to say it.
It's a great film.
I have
film.
To say this film. I did like the film.
Yeah, yeah.
I did
watched
like
it the other day.
Did you hate the film, Max?
Oh, Napoleon Dynamite?
Yeah.
No, I love
it's a great
that movie.
Film. It's very quotable. It's very rememberable. And that wraps this one up. This was 2013, Escape from Tomorrow.
Yeah.
Nailed it.
Nailed this one. And that also led into our top three films under $1 million budget.
New millennial films.
New millennial. I've been looking for
real
the right
quick,
catchphrase.
Don't want to leave off Thanksgiving, 2009, $3,500.
Yeah, we do.
Frankenhooker.
That was 1980s.
Way before 2000.
Right.
How about Birdemic, $12?
$10,000.
Yeah. Is that what it was?
2010.
Somebody's 401k plan.
You know what this does? It leads into our top three. I'm sorry. It leads into our
big reveal.
Big reveal. My apologies. And this is going over to Hard Sub Savage for next week. Go ahead and reveal it. What are we going to get into next time?
Something a little more heavy. And it's time, gentlemen. It's time. Full on Shakespeare. We're going Coriolanus, Ray Fiennes, Gerard Butler.
Yeah,
I'm gonna have to write that down.
Just remember, Coriolanus. It's the only film in Netflix with the word anus in it.
Okay,
I don't think it's spelled A-N-U-S.
Oh, yes, it is.
It is.
Oh, okay. Well, my bad. I spelled it wrong.
Right.
You have it tattooed on your knuckles.
Coriolanus.
That is Coriolanus. Next week, say it for me, Savage.
Coriolanus.
Ralph Fiennes directed. Ralph Fiennes starred.
Right.
We're talking director. Listen
Voldemort.
To the show. Listen
Just
to our show,
Voldemort.
People. That's next week. And this week, that wraps it up. So we'll see you next time. Good cue, Savage. Looking for that. Looking forward to it.
I'm not.
You haven't seen it yet. How do you know it was good?
I have no idea. But we're going to cue it. We're going to review it. And until then, however you say, Magic Kingdom.
Come with me and you'll be In a world of pure imagination, take a look and you'll see into your imagination.